Hi guys, welcome to the Office Podcast. My name is Gaia, and I know my voice is not the voice you normally hear when the podcast normally starts, but this one is a bit of a special episode. Today we focus a lot on labor law, and we chat to Natasha Modi, who's going to give us guidance, both as an employee, also as an employer, on how to deal with issues such as retrenchments and pay cuts during the lockdown. CCMA has received about 28,000 cases during the lockdown, and obviously unions have also showed some or expressed some concerns about whether or not the CCMA will be able to handle all these cases. It's hard to tell right now. We're living in a time of so much uncertainty, but we hope the episode will give you some guidance. And also, as a business owner, are you following the correct procedures in, you know, implementing things such as Section 189? I want to hand over to Lelo and Lighten to continue the conversation with Natasha. But if you want to send us an email, please feel free to send us an email at asktheoffice@gmail.com. Or you can also tweet us or send us a message or follow us on social media using the handles Office Podcast SA, both on Instagram and Twitter. And if you want to use the hashtag, please use hashtag The Office Podcast. And now I hand over to Lelo and Lighten as they chat to Natasha.
Hello, Natasha. Welcome to The Office Podcast.
Thank you, Lelo. Great to be here.
So, this is a very interesting one because we're doing the interview, digitally over Zoom because of social distancing. We're being responsible citizens. So, I'm with my colleague, Lighten. Hi, Lighten.
Hello, Lelo. Hi, Natasha. Pleasure to have you.
So, just tell us a bit about your business and you. What do you do and the services that you provide?
Lelo, I'm a labor law practitioner, so I'm an attorney, not an advocate. I also practice part-time as a commissioner at the CCMA. I have been an acting judge before, and I do presentations on various topics of law. So, tonight's topic, retrenchment, social media, and sexual harassment, and workplace bullying.
Wow, even workplace bullying as well. This is a topic that we actually have not spoken about, Light, and I think that's a topic for another episode, workplace bullying. Because I think
people tend to confuse workplace bullying with discrimination. It may be harassment, but discrimination has to fall within listed grounds, or property discrimination on an immutable ground. So, and a lot of people try and seek out the assistance of the CCMA and aren't able to get assistance because it's not discrimination in terms of the Employment Equity Act.
Mm-hmm. So I think in referring cases to the CCMA, people really have to just read up on the different categories and the different things that they can refer there rather than just sending. But today we are talking about retrenchments. COVID-19
yes.
Impacted so many companies. And I think what has been particularly shocking is that I expected that it would be more the small, you know, businesses that suffer. But what we've been seeing is even big organizations also, you know, talking about the stress, the strain that they've been experiencing as a result of the COVID-19 lockdown. So the first thing that comes up is we've been seeing and hearing a lot of companies talking about, you know, Section 189 retrenchments, and some have been saying salary cuts just because, you know, because of the financial strain. So for businesses that are feeling the pressure right now and are considering to retrench some of the employees, some of their workers to kind of alleviate that pressure, where do they start? What's the first thing? Can they just wake up and say, okay, I can't deal now, I'm going to issue letters to half of my staff members that we are retrenching them. What is the correct process for a business to follow in this instance?
Okay, the thing about small-scale retrenchments, we're not talking about large-scale retrenchments, which you find in Section 189, Capital A of the Labor Relations Act, firstly. Your retrenchment section in the Labor Relations Act is Section 189 of the Labor Relations Act, and it is a good section written relatively in clear and succinct language. And the first thing it states is, when you contemplate, you must tell your staff. So you can't contemplate and for months and months and months, hold it in, okay? And then all of a sudden, out of the blue, you then are looking at retrenchment. Mm. Retrenchment sometimes comes after a process of, in terms of COVID-19, layoff or short time, where you ask your employees to please stay at home and only come at certain days of the week, or you ask your employees to work maybe 4 hours a day as opposed to your nine-hour day with your lunch. This is in a way to try and mitigate the adverse effect that COVID-19 has had on the shutdown. You're not producing as much as you should have. People are not buying in terms of there's no demand. And so you have had to make certain allocations to your employees so that you don't go bankrupt. Mm-hmm. It is when you see that there needs to be a shift, a fundamental shift in the way that you operate. That's why we sometimes call retrenchment operational restructuring. Mm-hmm. Or a shift in terms of the finances, or your new broom, your new CEO has come in and wants to try a different leadership structure or a different way in which they want to handle the processes. Mm-hmm. Also, remember that in retrenchment, we often hear the word redundant. Your position is redundant. Yeah. And this happens when there are computers, machinery that can do the job that you can do, and that can do the job 24/7, and don't need a machinist to do the job, or need a specialist machinist. And you can then ask your company if you can upskill to that specialization to try and keep your job. Mm. So very important is to remember that if you're an employer, as soon as you contemplate that there may be some fallout, you might be too fat in your structure, that you need to go to the Section 189 and you need to start to try and communicate and consult and negotiate with your staff. This is a no-fault dismissal, Lelo. Mm. So, you know, unlike misconduct, unlike performance, where the particular employee is not doing the best job that they can do, or that employee has been caught with their hand in the cookie jar, that's not the case. This is not your fault, all right? And so there's a specific process that one must undertake in order to ensure that we reach consensus on the dismissal. One of them is your employees. That's the first step. Look at your employees and you will know, does that employee belong to a trade union? Because if I belong to a trade union, I cannot only speak to that employee. I must speak to the trade union representative on behalf of those employees. Okay. There's just been a famous constitutional court, all constitutional courts cases are famous, but the Constitutional Court has just come out with a judgment where it said that a majority union can actually dictate the terms to the minor unions, and that is perfectly acceptable in our law. Mm-hmm. I know it seems unfair, but until such time as the law changes, employees need to know that. Mm-hmm. Employees can also be represented by an attorney. You know, I've had some employers say, oh no, they're not allowed outside external representatives. Actually, they are. Yeah. Because the Section 189 doesn't define who should represent the employee. So it can be your mother, your brother who's studying law at varsity, anybody whom you trust to be your voice, your spokesperson. So that is really the start.
It is quite a process. So it's not an overnight process as well. It sounds like it does take a bit of time before you can get to that part where you now pay out those severance packages. So just one other question on the consultation piece. So you consult, and then what is the expectation of the, besides the fact that you tell them, can they change the business the business's decision in terms of you wanting to go the retrenchment route, or is it a consultation because you are asking them for alternatives for you to avoid that retrenchment? And this is in case where we are saying we're retrenching due to financial reasons.
Yeah, that's an excellent question, because I can envisage a lot of employees wanting to have this unpacked for them.
Yeah.
Once the employer has kind of, there may be some form of retrenchment, who has to come to you, and it normally gives you a letter in terms of Section 189 in brackets 3 of the Labor Relations Act. Mm-hmm. And that sets out the reason why they want to retrench. Now, in terms of the reason, you cannot turn around and say, oh, COVID-19, so terribly sorry, that's unacceptable. You need to give a proper substantive reason as to why these employees will lose their jobs. Yes, COVID-19 may be the start of the reason, mm-hmm. but then you can turn around and say, well, in COVID-19, we had X amount in our bank accounts. Because we paid out salaries, that then reduced and there was no income coming in. We didn't generate sufficient income to pay you again for the next month and further. Mm. And if you are unfortunately in the hotel industry or a restaurant, and I've just heard that the hairdressing, council was, not able to be, they weren't successful in their court application today in Cape Town. You know, once you say, look, we tried, we really tried, we ran a court case and the judges said, no, we cannot open, we have to wait. Mm. And this has eaten up all our money. Mm. Here's our bank accounts. Here's what we have left. Mm. Unfortunately, there is due to the financial impact of COVID-19, this is, we are going to have to find alternatives or retrench you.
Mm. Sure. Okay. So now, if let's say that there's an agreement now to say, okay, let's not retrench yet. Maybe then let's consider salary cards for specific people. What then is the organization or the employer supposed to do? Can they determine, they run the numbers and determine, okay, let's rather cut people's salaries or these people's salaries by whatever percentage? Or is that something that also needs, that they still need to go and consult with? Because I think they would have consulted about the fact that we are intending to, follow a Section 189 process. As a result of the consultations and the suggestions that came out of it, the employer said, okay, cool, the one that we want to go with is salary cut. Do they still need to go back and negotiate what percentage they are cutting, or can they just run the numbers and say, based on what we, predicted or looked at, this is what we are proposing as an alternative?
All right, that's again a phenomenal question, because sometimes the employer comes to you and says, as an alternative to you being dismissed, we would like to cut your salary. So we'd like you to continue working 7 days a week, 5 days a week, but we can't pay you for the amount of work that you're putting in. Yeah. It is then up to you to say, actually, I can't agree to that. I'm terribly sorry. A 20% reduction in my pay means that one of my children have to stay at home. I can't send them back to school. Mm. They're writing matric grade 12, or they're writing grade 7, and they're due to be back to school in June. And I can't afford now to pay their school fees. And so the easy answer to your brilliant question is this: that you as an employee always have the opportunity to say that alternative is not going to work for me and why. Mm-hmm. The employer also has the opportunity to say, look, this works for us and why. But in terms of cutting one's salary, that in labor law, is deemed as a unilateral change to the terms and conditions of employment, and you cannot do it on you. There have been a lot of employers that are doing this, and it's always, and I feel when they come to me and they say, well, this is what we're suggesting, I feel like their hands are tied, their backs, and to a certain extent they are, but you cannot defy the law. The law is there. Yes, it's not COVID, it's not made for COVID-19, but it's there, and there are employees that would rather take a cut than not have work. And I think that employees need to remember that 20% of those who were working in South Africa, and we have a very high unemployment rate, have now lost their jobs. So they are in the minority of South Africans who are, I see you sighing, I'm so sorry, but that's the reality. And the reality is that you now have 20% more people who are unemployed. And so the rate has got shot up to maybe 50, maybe even 60, 70% of people that are unemployed. We are all in this together. And I think that is the process that one must follow when we retrench. Help us, help you, help us. We are all in this together. Let's take this process as a great way of becoming lean and mean, of a great way of maybe looking at other alternatives that one can do. And you're meant to do this in terms of the law. You're meant to have a consensus-seeking consultation process where you sit down. In the 300-odd retrenchments that I've done in my lifetime, I've been sat down with the most phenomenal alternatives. They were almost like dissertations on how to run the business, how to take it forward. And the employer must take that seriously, because the employer has the onus, the duty, to respond to the alternatives that employees bring to the table. So, and it can be anything. Scrap those tickets to the rugby, to the soccer, to the box at wherever. Scrap the tickets to the ballet, to whatever. Take out the canteen. Let's look at alternatives such as making our lunch from home. So yes, all of those. Look, at the moment, no sport is going to be played, and we're not going to enjoy the theatre and the arts. That's another huge debate. How do we support them during this time? But it's one of those things where, as an employee, that would be the first thing that I would say. You know, all the leisure, all the sporting activities, all the social responsibility activities. Now your social responsibility is in-house. That's
you know, that last point actually hit home.
let's say that, I mean, the social responsibility, those are usually things that we do, you know, for those who need our help the most. And now during this period where the organization is contemplating, you know, retrenching because they are under financial pressure, they can't even help those others that they were able to help. Yo, I didn't actually think about this one.
Yeah.
So one other question that I wanted to ask is, if an employer, obviously we were in level 5 and level 4 of our lockdown, and they were contemplating, or they had issued a notice, you know, of retrenchment in level 5 or level 4, and now, and because they were not able to operate during that time, but now we're going into level 3 where industries and all the different sectors are now opening, is that letter still valid, or does the employer now need to do anything extra beyond because now we're going into level 3 and they are now going to be able to get an income?
You know, that letter may still be valid. It's dependent on the reasons that the employer gave the employees. What I would say, though, is that the employees then have greater alternatives to offer the employer at this stage, and they will continue to be greater. You know, you did say something previously, and I forgot to take it up with you and reach out to you, and that was the timing of it all. Mm. You know that employers cannot dictate how long the retrenchment process, the consultation process is going to take. They can't dictate that. Mm. That is something that is discussed between the employees and the employer as to the timing of these dismissals. And you are perfectly within your rights as the employer or the employee to say, look, this is from inception, I contemplated your retrenchment, so I had to move forward with the process. Mm-hmm. But we're going to continue on through the lockdown levels and actually see what the reality is. You know, I've had employers come to me and they said no. Because they can only open again in level 1, they definitely want to retrench.
Yeah.
So that the employees at least get some severance package, because with the lockdown, they would not get a salary until level 1. So that was their way of mitigating their adverse risk. And in that circumstances, We told the employees about taking a higher severance pay when you volunteer your retrenchment. Oh. Look, Lelo, if the writing's on the wall, the writing's on the wall.
Yeah.
Don't fight your employer and be negative about it when you can actually say, you know what, I agree. I've been redundant for the last 4 months. Mm. I can see it. I haven't done anything whilst I've been at home, and so I'd like to volunteer my retrenchment. Mm-hmm. And then you can negotiate. And what's good about the negotiation is because there's a statutory minimum requirement in terms of severance pay. That statutory minimum is 1 week per completed year of service. Yeah. So you may be in your seventh year of service, mm-hmm. but it will only pay you out 6 weeks because you're in the middle of your completed years of service. In volunteering your retrenchment, you could say, hey, what about 1.5 weeks and include my 7th week? Or what about 2 weeks and include my 7th week? So it gives you a little bit of negotiation power with that. And of course, I mean, 6 weeks as opposed to 14 weeks goes a long way. It's double, more than double. A long way to assist you in planning for the future.
Yeah, but yeah, I'm just thinking about 1 week for every year of, you know, yes. service. It's not a lot, but it is what it is. The law is what it is. And I think what I've seen, like you were saying, is that some companies do then entice, you know, people volunteering by offering more than just that 1 week. So Lighten just disappeared because I was gonna ask if he's got any question that he wants to add before I ask something else. Lighten, do you have a question?
Yeah. So what I wanted to ask was that, just in line with what we were talking about earlier, was that what is the employer's rights and also the employee's rights when it comes to, let's say, there are no retrenchments per se, but then there's sort of like the almost changing some of your payments, I think we touched on it earlier, like your salary, maybe lessening it a bit, but also not paying out your benefits so that the company saves money so that they can actually afford to have enough cash flow to pay employees for up until, you know, they get in a better place financially. I think there's a bit of confusion around that from an employee's perspective. Could you enlighten us, like, what are the rights and a proper way to get around that?
Yeah, sure. So on the petrol, it's medical aid. It's your pension fund. Now, you cannot not pay the pension fund. It's got to be paid over. It's being asked for if you do not pay the pension fund. It is incumbent into you in your income, into your salary. You get taxed on that. Also, I mean, it's tax, not a benefit. But if you do not pay over the employee's tax, like PAYE, UIF, then you are going to get the employee into terrible trouble, not because it hasn't been paid, but because they won't pay out. So in terms of the TERS fund, they have, thank God, told us that they will not punish the employee because the employer has not paid UIF. But in terms of UIF, so now you're in retrenchment. This has got nothing to do with TERS fund. This has got to do with I am dismissing you through no fault of your own. And you, as the employer, have not paid over the UIF that you have deducted from the employee's salary. You are in for trouble. It's not going to be taken lightly. And the problem is that your poor employee is not going to get paid. So you're placing almost a death warrant on your employee. Why would you do that? Now, she's looking towards his leadership style in order to come out of COVID-19 and after COVID-19. During COVID-19, I certainly wouldn't make bad decisions like that. In terms of medical aid, especially when this is a health emergency, a national disaster on a health spectrum, I certainly would not take medical aid. And I think you're going to be very hard pressed to have made those changes and not get into trouble with the CCMA or the Labour Court or even the press. And that's what is happening at the moment, is that everybody's outing everybody else, you know. And you can't afford to have a bad press. A look at one of the biggest pharmaceuticals who have refused to pay rent and then get into trouble with the competition board for price gouging. I don't know anyone who has gone back to that shop to buy medicines and supplies. We've found alternatives because we are angry.
Sure. This, you know, I think one other thing, you know, what we're talking about now with medical aid just reminds me that even though things are difficult and there's pressures and all of that, as an employer, you still have the responsibility to look after the well-being of your staff members up until the point that they are no longer working for you. So benefits like medical aid, those are things that you definitely should not play with, especially during this pandemic that we are dealing with. So Latin, do you have another question? What was that?
No, I think you're going to get into some of the things that I need to ask. I think it'll come at the end.
No, I am at the end. I wanted to ask.
Oh, okay. Okay, so in that case, I'd also like to know what are different steps that employers of a smaller scale can take that perhaps do not have the financial means to keep on supporting. For example, like if you have a domestic at your home and you're an employer in that regard, or if you run, let's say, a shop that only employs three people, what are some of the steps that the employers can take to make sure that they're protecting their employees, but also taking into effect that they might not actually have the big corporation money that other larger companies have?
You know, it's difficult, but you still have to look after your employees in terms of the law, and ignorance of the law is no excuse. Mm-hmm. So if you are wanting to retrench your employee, you have to do it in accordance with Section 189 of the LRA, and your failure to do that will also get you to the CCMA, where the CCMA practices social justice. So it's trying to correct the societal wrongs. So you are wrong if you do not retrench your domestic worker correctly, and in terms of Section 189. Also, there are, you know, every industry has, or there are industries that have different standards. For instance, for a domestic worker, and I need to come back to you on it, but I'm sure it's not 1 year compensation for every completed year work. I think it's 2 years. So there are different standards, and those need to be known by the employers before they embark on retrenchment. You know, retrenchment is when you don't need a domestic worker. And let me tell you that you do need a domestic worker. You do need your gardener. You know, you do need your receptionist, because who else is going to pick up the phone and take the nonsense that some of those callers throw your way? It is your receptionist. You are not going to do it yourself. Who is going to do the ironing, the bane of my existence? It is your domestic worker. It's not just because you retrench them does not mean that their position does not exist. It still exists in your house, and therefore your retrenchment is wrong. It's wrong, both substantively and procedurally. You can run a beautifully procedural retrenchment unless you get a full and final settlement from your employee by paying them more, asking them to volunteer their retrenchment. You are going to get into, again, serious trouble at the CCMA.
So, and Natasha, you are available for all these small businesses that may require advice, or are you only for the big ones, for the big guys?
I'm absolutely available at this time. I think from big to small, they all need the same advice and the same experience. And as I said, I mean, I'm experienced in this. Not one of my retrenchments has gone to the labor court wherein my process was found wanting. So I am definitely available to assist employers in getting it right and trying to be as fair as possible in these circumstances.
Yeah, and I think that's really what the law is about. The law is all about fairness, just finding and making sure that the process, whatever process we follow, is fair. And I think now there will be more sensitivity, because when employers are retrenching during this period, we are making our unemployment rates worse than what it is currently. I mean, you were saying it could go up to about 50-60%. We don't know, I mean, given how things are going. So just my one last question from my side, Natasha, is, If I was to ask you to give employers that are having difficult times right now and are contemplating retrenchment, and they still haven't started yet, but they, what advice would you give to them? What is the one piece of advice that you say, if you start thinking of retrenchment as a possibility because of financial pressures to your company, this is my one big advice.
My advice is this. You cannot eat an elephant all at once. It's got to be small bites at a time. And also be very sure in terms of making this big step. And let me tell you, retrenchment is huge. It affects all the staff, those that remain and those that go. You've got to be very sure that you're only doing this once. Don't do it twice, three times, four times over. It's not a good plan for your company's morale. And those people who are going to be let go, it's not great. So if you are going to follow the process, you follow the process, emotional maturity, and provenance to ensure that it will only be done once.
That's such good advice. And I think you are so correct when you say it does not only affect the people that you end up letting go, but it even affects the people that stay behind as well. And I think the biggest risk with following this process is you might decide that I've got my people who are top talent, who are critical to my business. I will not touch them based on whatever criteria obviously is agreed upon. But those people might be spooked by this process and end up leaving the organization as well.
Exactly. Exactly. I've had people say to me, you know what, I was chosen to be retrenched, and then they asked me to come back and work again, and I walked in there and it was like a morgue. I walked straight out of there again. So yes, you've got to go into this really carefully, knowing exactly what you're going to do, and how you're going to lead this company out of COVID-19.
Well, thank you so, so much, Natasha. I think everything that you've shared today will definitely help, employers, big and small out there that are possibly, you know, thinking about what to do in these difficult times. So where do they get hold of you if they need to consult with you and your business?
Lelo, they can find me on the web. And I would suggest that they look at all the interviews that I have done previously over the span of 3 years to try and get a feel for the way labor law is supposed to be practiced and the way that I practice labor law. And then obviously on my website is my number and my email address. The best possible way of getting hold of me is via natasha@moni.co.za.
Awesome. Thank you so, so much. And we will put your website details on the description for the podcast as well so that they can see the details and be able to click from there. Thank you so, so much. Leighton, is there anything you want to say besides thank you? This has been awesome.
Thank you so much, Natasha. I think you've given actually both employers and employees such valuable information. So we really thank you for that.
Okay, pleasure.
Thanks, Natasha.
Until we meet again, guys.